Hi, and welcome to the Medication Safety Podcast. The Applied Medication Safety Podcast is for healthcare professionals to help us learn from our past and to use that so that we can care for patients safely. Today, I am really happy that we have a pharmacy student who is going to share some of her experiences with us. This student comes to us from an East Asian country and is the child of first-generation immigrants. So she has just a wonderful insight into a couple of different cultures, and we get to explore how the pain management may be changing in different cultures and languages. We pull out a bunch of questions that I don't think we have answers to, but they're probably some good questions to explore. So I hope that you enjoy this as much as I did. Without further ado, here she is. Welcome to the Medication Safety Podcast.
Thanks.
The reason I'm really excited to talk with you is because you are a pharmacy student.
Yes.
So you are in the midst of learning about all things pharmacy, which is definitely more than putting pills in bottles.
Oh, for sure.
And you've had a little bit of exposure to medication safety on the inside of an acute care setting. But why don't you just give a little bit of description of what you've experienced so far, what brought you to pharmacy, what kinds of things are you excited to be working towards?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, currently fourth year pharmacy student, going through my APPE rotations, that's our advanced practical experience. And really, I've only had two clinical rotations so far. So one in the surgical intensive ICU and one in the cardiac ICU. And what kind of really sparked my interest in pharmacy was really kind of growing up in a first generation American family and having that language barrier and really kind of taking charge with my grandfather's healthcare journey. And, you know, initially was interacting with those community pharmacists, you know, just asking for refills and kind of communicating with them and then kind of Googling the indications to my own grandfather who couldn't read, you know, any of the labels. So stemmed from there, that was my initial spark. And then, you know, going to pharmacy, you kind of realize there's actually way more than just community pharmacy and you're not just counting pills. There's so much more to patient care and kind of optimizing that patient care as well. So currently looking to residency, we'll see how that turns out, but, you know, really excited to finish up my rotations. Definitely have gained a lot of, you know, learning experiences thus far.
That's fantastic. So one of the things that you mentioned that I'm really curious about is the difference between the Eastern and Western medicine. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about second generation coming here with a grandfather who may be experiencing culture shock on so many different levels, and healthcare being one of them. Mm-hmm. What was that process of understanding, I guess, Western medicine? Was that an exciting thing and a fearful thing, an unknown thing, all of the above? Mm-hmm. How were they navigating that?
Yeah, so definitely, like you said, the Western medicine is more homeopathic. So, you know, taking, you know, these forms of medications are definitely different to them, the more synthetically, you know, produced medications. So what I've seen a lot in my grandfather's healthcare, even my own parents as well, they still try to incorporate those homeopathic methods as well. You know, there's the coining, you know, there's a lot of things that they utilize or use that, you know, I don't really know much of the evidence to it, but I think it's kind of, again, like you said, that culture, what they grew up with and kind of trying to transition. But, you know, I've noticed with more of the I guess more of the conditions that are,
So Eastern medicine mm-hmm. is more homeopathic. It looks at balances. There's the acid base balances mm-hmm. of acidic foods and basic mm-hmm. foods and creating a state of equilibrium in the body. There's different energies mm-hmm. or, I don't know other terms because I'm not as familiar with them.
Yeah.
But there's also a long tradition associated with Eastern medicine, which is not to be ignored because mm-hmm. when you've done something for over 1,000 years because it worked, regardless of whether you understand why it worked or how it worked, mm-hmm. if it works, then there's value associated with it. So certainly not to be dismissed. And there's been some really interesting comparisons between Eastern and Western medicine. So that's why I was curious from a cultural perspective of
what their reaction was. Mm-hmm. Did they blend the two? Did they abandon Eastern medicine in favor of Western medicine? It sounds like they held on to some things and incorporated Western medicine into their goals for health.
Yeah, that's perfectly right. I saw more of the blending of the two. So, you know, they'll still try to hold on to some of those traditions, but also, you know, there are more conditions like hypertension and, you know, diabetes. They'll go with more with the Western approach. Not to say that, you know, non-pharmacological approaches aren't important, but at the same time, to kind of treat those conditions too, you need the Western approach with those particular medications.
Okay. You mentioned coining. What is coining?
I wish I was a better knowledgeable person, but I believe you kind of take a coin and I think it's some sort of fluid. I don't know exactly what it consists of, but you kind of rub it in and I think rub the coin with that fluid over, I guess, certain parts of your body. And I think the belief is it kind of helps the blood flowing. It's supposed to kind of help with those, I guess, lymph nodes and those fluids moving around. And it's supposed to help clear, you know, whatever it is that you're not feeling well. If, you know, my grandfather says he's not feeling well for whatever reason, he'll ask my grandma, you know, like, can you do the coining?
It's just very interesting.
Yeah.
So moving into the things that you have experienced, especially now that you've seen a lot of the diversity that's present just within the profession of pharmacy, the focus for this season of applied medication safety is on opiate safety. So have you seen things that would make you concerned, or have you seen things that you've identified as safety practices for managing opiate therapy? What's been your experience in school so far and what you've learned?
Yeah, so, you know, in our curriculum, we've kind of talked about, you know, pain management and, you know, what's out there for, you know, opioid use disorder as well. And going more in the practical experience and rotations, you know, talking about multimodal approaches to managing pain is a huge factor as well, just because of the increased talk lately about the opioid crisis. So, you know, really trying to navigate that and, you know, stressing the importance of the multimodal approaches of managing that pain in patients. And, you know, that was a big thing that I saw, especially in the surgical intensive ICU or surgical ICU rotation, you know, really finding the appropriate time to start de-escalating the opiate therapy and kind of incorporating, you know, acetaminophen if it's appropriate or ibuprofen if that's appropriate for the patient as well. But I think with opioid management of pain, it's also, you kind of have to have that balance. I think there's a little bit of that stigma with, you know, opioid medications. And I think with this crisis going on, some patients are actually fearful of taking opioid medications and managing their pain. For my outpatient community rotation, for instance, in the outpatient pharmacy at an academic medical center, I did a lot of the discharge counselings, actually. So I went up to the patient's room. And, you know, typically they're discharged on opioid medications. And typically when I talk to a patient and I mention an opioid medication, they instantly, you know, kind of freeze up and they're instantly kind of in and out like, oh, I don't need those. Just take it out of the order. So I think there's different perspectives around for sure with opioid pain management.
Very cool. Now, you mentioned a couple of terms I'm not sure everyone would be familiar with. What did you mean by multimodal?
Yeah, so multimodal is kind of finding, you know, different means of managing pain. So again, we're talking about opioid, but, you know, there's also other types of agents, you know, such as Tylenol or acetaminophen that most people may be familiar with. But, you know, also the more non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which have some of those properties that can manage pain as well. So multimodal as in, I guess, kind of trying to use different means of approaching the pain management and different agents.
So not using a lot of one drug, but a little of a lot of drugs.
Oh, yes, correct. Correct.
How interesting. So when you are surveying the field and you're being exposed to the idea of medication safety, what comes to mind when you think about medication safety in the context of pharmacy?
And specific to opioids and medication safety?
Not necessarily specific. When I say that opioid safety is a focus for the season, it doesn't mean it's the exclusive topic.
So this is definitely my first exposure to medication safety. So, you know, prior coming into this, I really thought it just kind of entailed, you know, are medications given appropriately? You know, are they given the appropriate amount, or are they given too much or too little? So I guess my point of view was more tunneled in, thinking that it only had to do with medication in that sense. But, you know, I've come to learn that in medication safety, you're really evaluating so many other different components that are in relation to medications, and not just in terms of the dose and their effects on patients.
What do you mean other things?
Yeah, like for instance, you know, system failures. It could relate to maybe, you know, infusion pumps that have malfunctioned, or maybe there was a downtime that may have caused, you know, the wrong dosing or wrong dose that was administered to a patient, or could very well include, you know, the automatic dispensing system. You know, are nurses able to retrieve that medication maybe in time? So there's just, I guess, those different factors that kind of all go into medication safety and kind of all tie in together.
You mentioned system failures, and if I'm a patient who doesn't really know much about pharmacy, and I mean, sounds pretty ominous. It sounds, I mean, I think system failure, I think of Y2K, or, you know, the computer screen going black and, you know, problems happening all over the place. But when you're talking about a department or a profession, what do you mean by system? What are the systems in pharmacy that are supporting that patient?
Gotcha. That makes more sense. So, for instance, you know, in the dispensing segment, systems that are part of that specific component would be, you know, barcode scanning and verifying that we're retrieving the correct drug, and just even within the electronic health record system, you know, if orders are put in, and sometimes there can be alerts that come up. So those sort of systems. And also in another way in dispensing, you know, pulling the drug from the actual automatic dispensing cabinet. Sometimes maybe if you're pulling a drug and there's no order or it needs an override, you know, there's just different, I guess, components to that action of dispensing. And
I wonder if a layperson example might be that in pharmacy, we have people with skills and technology and resources that are arranged and organized in a way to ensure that the medications that you need are here when you need it. Does that sound reasonable?
Yes, it does. It does. Yes, that was put out greatly.
So those would be the systems. And when we're talking about systems, we're talking about the people and the skills working with the technology and the resources. Mm-hmm. And when that doesn't work quite right, then we say we have a system breakdown. Mm-hmm. It's not just one person. It's that person working with the technology, with the resources, with the demands of that moment. That's the person's part, but we also have technology that's talking with each other, and we have resources that are going up and down as the demands of the hospital require. And so in all those cases, if it's not providing the exact outcome that we want or the result that we want, then we call it a system breakdown. It doesn't mean everything came to a screeching halt. It just means it wasn't quite what we were hoping for.
Yes, correct. That was a great way to word it.
Well, I hope it makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially for folks that are listening. What kind of question might you have for me since we're talking about medication safety?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, how did you get into medication safety?
Oh, my. Well, that goes back to working as a nurse and having the experiences of giving medications and some of the challenges that came into that, and then working as a pharmacist. Seeing another side of that, the challenges for dispensing and managing drug therapies. And the two of those together provide an excellent vantage point by which to overlook the entire process of medication use, which includes the ordering, the dispensing, the administering, and the monitoring of medications. So having had some upfront first line, first row seats, so to speak, of many aspects of the process, it put me in a good position to help appreciate where some of those areas may break down or be weak when put under stress. And so that's where I ended up with the current position that I'm in now.
Yeah, and I think that's a great story, and you have such a great background coming with, you know, all your views that you've gained and the knowledge you've gained from all that.
Oh, thank you. So if we're going to try to bring that back a little bit to the opiate safety, you had mentioned starting this journey out of providing a need for your family. And I'm curious on the community side of things and the communication side of things. Do you think there are some specific risks associated with analgesics or opiates in that population where we have those communication barriers and challenges, other than the, I guess, the general challenges that you would have with communication? But is there something, do you feel like, that is specific to opiates, I guess?
Yeah, I would say for opiates, it's always that concern of over-sedation and respiratory depression. And I think, you know, without that health literacy as well, and understanding that, you know, drugs are okay as long as they're used correctly and by assessing, you know, when it is appropriate to use opioids specifically. I can actually relate this back to my grandfather. So when he was in hospice care eventually at home with his cancer, so he had morphine prescribed to him. And I think not having that understanding within my family of when to treat the pain appropriately, sorry. But as I was saying, just, you know, being aware of those different types of adverse effects that could be a potential of opioid medications. I think there's just still this stigma behind it and, you know, not really knowing when to appropriately use those agents to treat pain and when not to. So I think it's just that education and kind of giving that population that, you know, it is okay to use, but in a very specific, controlled way.
When we're crossing cultural boundaries like that, are the expectations different?
I think so. So I think especially, you know, we kind of talked about, you know, homeopathic stuff and the non-pharmacological approaches. So it feels as if this, you know, Western side of medicine is sort of a last resort. So, you know, they'll try to manage pain other ways, you know, whether it be, you know, balms you can rub over topically to manage that pain. It really does feel, now that I think about it, that, you know, Western medicine seems to be that last resort, and especially with that pain management.
I'll go out on a limb here and say that maybe pain can be viewed differently from other cultures and other perspectives, that pain is often associated as a symptom in Western medicine and almost universally negative. Whereas I can see a role in other cultures where pain may be seen or viewed as integrated into a holistic part of the disease process, not something to be siphoned off and dealt with separately, not something to be treated just symptomatically, but as a measure of the overall therapy success, so that pain becomes the barometer by which the success of the therapy is going to be seen. So I'm throwing that out as a complete, I guess, fictional example, but one that comes from just reading and in a variety of different cultural settings, that there could be a different valuation. So that's why I'm, again, just kind of culturally curious if there is, in when we're not only a language barrier, but when we're trying to explain what we're doing with analgesia, if the end goal is something that we're in alignment with, or maybe that is the conversation we should be having, which is, what do you expect pain management to do for you? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, no, yeah, I think that is definitely a fair question. Yeah, I guess, you know, people may have different goals and, you know, what is manageable pain as well. So,
well, and just with in our Western culture, I see a variety within our own patient population where person A says, I don't want to feel any pain. Well, I don't know what that feels like because the experience of living involves some degree of discomfort. Even if you sit in a chair for too long, you'll have some discomfort that prompts you to move. And if you don't have that, then you'll end up with some bed sores, which is absolutely a lot more discomfort. So there, the expectation of I don't want to have any pain, almost synonymous with I don't want to feel anything at all, as opposed to a person who says, I don't want to have side effects. I don't want to be so medicated that I'm not able to function or carry on a conversation. And I certainly will tolerate a certain amount of discomfort to a particular level, mm-hmm. as opposed to the other person who says, I don't want any pain medication at all. The pain that I experience is going to pass, and it's a way for me to communicate with my body. And not saying that I particularly gravitate towards any one of those, but I have had patients that have told me all of those across the spectrum. And I can't help but think that there are certain cultures that may emphasize or accentuate something in that spectrum. So that's why I was curious.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair assessment. I think what I've grown up with is, you know, if it's pain that will go away, then that's fine. You don't have to treat it. But if it's more prolonged and serious, then by all means, go ahead. So I think there are a lot of different perspectives and approaches. And, you know, how do you manage that pain and when you should?
The other piece that comes to mind comes from linguistics, which is mm-hmm. if there is no word to describe a particular concept, then it's very difficult to think about that concept and vice versa. And I'm curious when it comes to pain management, if we're talking about things for which there are not perhaps corresponding concepts on the other side of that cultural divide or words, and vice versa, if there are concepts and words on the other side that don't translate well into a Western understanding. That's a complete unknown to me. So do you have any insight into that just because you have experience in two cultures?
I guess not that I'm fully aware of. And there's certainly expressions, you know, just in English, you know, you express your level of pain, you know, like, you know, 10 out of 10 pain, it's, you know, the worst pain you've had in your life. So I would say on that spectrum, there's some similarities of you can express your pain on a sort of a scale, but nothing else that I'm fully experienced with or aware of.
Mm-hmm. And I, to provide, I guess, further example of that, when we look at nociceptive types of pain, there is a different experience of physical pain that comes from a burn, for example, which is different than blunt force trauma, which is different than cutting or piercing, which is different than neuropathic pain. And while we can use some of these adjectives of modes by injury, in the injurious modes, we don't have a great diversity of terms to describe those, that subjective experience. We call it all pain. So if you say, is your pain 10 out of 10? Is it the worst pain imaginable? How do you compare the experience of a crushing injury to the knee, to having an electrical shock, to having a burn? Because they're qualitatively very different experiences. They're all painful. But, you know, when you're trying to now compare them, it's like, well, was the electrical 10 out of 10 different or worse than having a burn that was 10 out of 10 that was different or worse than having a crushing injury that was 10 out of 10? I mean, aren't we all just kind of boiling this all down to a single term?
Yeah, you actually make a great point. Like, they are all essentially quite different, you know, types of pain. But, you know, what I'm seeing ultimately, yeah, we are actually, you know, putting it all down in that one word, pain, when they're all so different.
And I can't help but think that maybe there are other languages that have different words for that.
Yeah.
And that's why I wonder how to cross that divide when we're asking somebody about to rate their pain, and they may be thinking, well, which one? What kind?
That's fair.
Giving birth was very different than having a kidney stone for me, for example.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's an interesting, you know, thought and question now that I'm thinking of too. But yeah, in my regards, not that I'm aware so far in my culture that we have, you know, very specific words that could describe those different sorts of pain that we may encounter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, the same is true, I think, with the therapies that we use to treat them. We certainly have the wide variety of terms. We've got NSAIDs and opiates and prostaglandin inhibitors and neuropathic agents and NMDA receptor antagonists. And so we've got all these little labels that are often oriented mechanically in how they're working on different chemical or physical structures in the body. And we use those as somewhat of a proxy to show them the multimodal, if you will, the diversity of approaches that we're using to interrupt pain cycles at different places. But it's all called pain. We don't actually differentiate between the subjective experience of pain and all the different ways that we're using to treat it.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I guess only thing is, you know, like gabapentin, you know, for specifically, I guess, nerve pain.
Neurologic pain.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're essentially right.
We tend to think of it in that way, but I don't think we differentiate the experience of it any differently. So that is a challenge, and it's something at least that I've recognized when we have post-surgical patients who come in who have had chronic pain issues. They may have back pain, they may have knee pain, and they may have this neurologic windup that's already in place due to that chronic pain that exists in the dorsal horn, the root ganglia of the spinal cord, that we want to use these neuropathic agents, and yet they're here for a surgical procedure, and now we're cutting into them, and so they're experiencing that pain that comes from trauma. Well, that's overlaid, and it's interacting with other existing pain types. And you know, do we need to be more specific when we assess these patients to say, tell me on that scale of 1 to 10, how bad is your incisional pain that's over your knee replacement? I know your back pain is going to be different, and that incisional pain is going to be overloading nerve signals and fibers that are traveling up through that spinal cord right where that back pain is, and so it's going to be giving that a boost. But we'd want to try to focus in on that one area, because there are going to be some medications that are specific to that incisional pain that probably aren't going to work that great for your back pain. So let's try to separate that out. And maybe that's a better conversation to have, especially when we have complex pain patients.
Yeah, I think that's actually, you know, a great recommendation. You know, starting to shift, I guess, our focus is, like you said, on your specific site and what type of pain, instead of just overgeneralizing everything in that approach.
So you'll be a clinical pharmacist on floors, and you'll be encountering pain management. What are you going to be some of the things that, I guess, your takeaways and things that you're going to, the lessons learned and things that you're carrying forward into the future here?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot. But I guess to start for pain management, again, you know, utilizing multimodal approaches to therapy for pain management and finding a good way in really assessing, I guess, how to manage pain. And I know there's, you know, still a lot of work that needs to be done in really refining that process, but I guess just be very cognizant that pain looks different for everybody as well, and kind of approaching the patient in that sort of perspective, but also kind of assessing other factors as well.
So that was the podcast. As always, I learned a ton. I appreciate the time our student spent sharing some of her personal experiences and letting us use that to better understand other patients who may come from different cultures, different backgrounds, and think about maybe how some of the ways that we are trying to explain things may not have a corollary, just as what they may be trying to tell us might not have a corresponding concept or word. So thanks again for your time. Thank you for listening and for the effort that you spend in putting this into use so that we can put into practice the lessons that we learned so that we can care for patients safely.